Andrew.
Thank you, Rich. Very, very good. I just wonder, the future of royalism, you know, you paint a very pessimistic view about young people in society, and that's one that's shared across the whole of the UK, where we have development of violence.
Andy, you'll have to speak up.
Sorry,
because people the back can't hear.
It's like this case. Worry about your people in society. I'm thinking about loyalism and its crossover into Scotland, and you know the current constitutional dilemmas. You know, we have the forthcoming referendum on Scottish independence, and I'm wondering to what extent it could actually be factors, not just your people in Northern Ireland that might reignite peace process. To what extent do you think that it might be that constitutional certainty in Scotland that might reignite sort of sense of uncertainty which would reignite violence?
Well, like I say, I'm an Ulster man, and I'm only concerned with what happens, you know, our relationship with our neighbours in the south. You know, and I don't see why we can't just live separately but together on the same island. What happens in Scotland is a matter for the people of Scotland to decide. But Republicans, some Republicans, certainly within the dissident circles, would say, well, sure, there is no union anymore. You know, if Scotland leave the British Isles sort of thing, the United Kingdom, sure, what reason would you want to be part of it anymore? You know, why don't you just become part of United Ireland? But it's not about that. Whatever happens, you know, with Scotland, you know, certainly the people I would know in Scotland, or we would know in Scotland, have no intention of being independent. You know, they still would see themselves as part of the union and be very proud of it. But whatever happens there, it won't affect me, it won't affect Colin, it won't affect our constituency. But republicanism might think that this is another crack, you know, and another weakness, and try to promote it or exploit it in some way.
I think that the whole thing about Scottish nationalism and the referendum on nationalism are on separation. I think it's a very different animal, Scottish nationalism, from Irish nationalism. And I think it's probably in some bizarre way a bigger question for Republicans, because they wisely are not saying that they're going to get involved, because nobody knows what way it's going to go. The generous, or I suppose the people are of a mind that Scotland will go for maximum devolution and not for total separation from the rest of the United Kingdom. So the only people that have expressed emotionally about Scotland here has been the former leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, and I think Peter Robinson does. But Republicans are wisely not saying a lot. But just on a lighter note, I was down in Dublin a few weeks ago, and with the collapse of the Celtic Tiger, I did hear one person saying on the radio, if Scotland leaves, does that mean there's a vacancy?
Can I ask a naive question? To what extent does the electoral system, to local authorities and to the legislative assembly, to what extent does that provide representation for people who feel disaffected?
You can take that. Drinky, do you want to take that?
It doesn't. No, it doesn't really mean it. You know, anybody, the problem we have with the electoral, it's not the problem of the electoral system, it's the people who, the apathy within loyalism and people who don't want to vote. You know, and the best way to say it at this present time is, you know, everybody knows the problems. Speaking of Scotland, everybody knows, or many people knows, the problems that Rangers are having at the minute. You know, and I say to our people, and many of you would put a tenner in an envelope and send it to Rangers to help them to save Rangers, but you'll not put an axe on a ballot box to save Ulster. You know, they don't relate, you know, to politics. I've said it this morning, we were talking to the policing board, there's an apathy in this country, and it's getting worse, because people won't go to hospitals here because there's a 6-hour waiting time, and they'll be told to go and see your doctor after it anyway, unless they're really seriously ill. So nobody wants to go to the hospitals. They won't tell the police if there's a crime, because the police takes that long to respond, and there's so much about human rights and health and safety and what happened. Nothing happens anyway. Very rarely do the police come out and collar somebody. And if you ask them to vote, they say, well, what's the point? There's nobody to vote for. So this apathy is a danger to everybody anyway. We have to try to encourage people, not just about us becoming politicians or us somehow forming a political party to move on, to support unionism. Like, we are loyalists, but doesn't bar us from being unionists. We are very pro-union ourselves, and we want to get as many people as possible to realise the value of the vote and their entitlement to it. But there's, like I say, this apathy, people just don't want to know.
John.
Yeah, two separate questions, Jackie. The first is, how well are you doing with the representative voice of the working class since we've had the law of power sharing? The second one is, you say this is a hard threat
to the people,
what would happen
in the
process of modelling? What if they
change
tactics and, for instance,
form
the lawyers there, would you be able to hold
the line
as easily?
Well, the relationship with the DUP is probably better now than it has been. Because for a long time, I used to say, we need to unite unionism. You know, but then unionism could rightly say to loyalism, well, why don't you unite yourselves? You know, we never mind talking about uniting. It's not a fair demand to make on unionism when loyalism is so fractured itself. So what we've been doing this last number of years is trying to form some of a bond, close the gap between unionism and loyalism. But if you're a unionist and you look at the problems within loyalism, would you want anything to do with it, really? Because there's a lot of skeletons in the cupboard, there's a lot of warts there, and there's a lot of problems that there has been in the past. And not everybody seems to be moving on at the same place. Whenever we were talking about decommissioning and moving on, I had this thing called time, where it was truth, integrity, morals and ethics. And I believe that. I believe for a long time. And I'm lucky enough to have people like Colin who support me and believe that you have to have integrity. You have to be believable. We were never, ever believable. Nobody would ever pay any heed to what we said, because the likes of Gary McMichael, even or Davy Adams, were saying one thing, and people like Adair and the Sukries and the Greys that were just doing whatever the hell they liked on the other side. So there was no parallel lines. Now we're getting to the position where we have integrity. At least some of us have integrity, and it's not as difficult for the DUP to become involved with us. Recently, we have taken the likes of Hugo Swire and different politicians or different members from the British government to areas like Lisburn to show them how well the organisations can work with the DUP. They have a very good relationship in Lisburn, and a lot of things are happening. The whole community benefits. And then we bring them to Sandy Row, where there's no relationship really, or until recently there had been no relationship between the DUP and the likes of ourselves or the community. But fortunately, Jimmy Spratt, and like, because Sammy Douglas is originally from Sandy Row, we're closing that gap again, and there's more and more people working together. The danger about the second part about dissonance, we promised there would never be an R&D jerk reaction sort of situation. No matter what happened, it would just be, right, take stock here. Everybody start thinking about all the good work we've done. It just takes one knee-jerk reaction to undo all the good we've done. And we've probably yet to be tested. I've seen a time in the past, for any reason at all, the UFF would have went and killed somebody. If there was a member of the RUC killed, different areas of the Ulster Freedom Fighters would say, right, everybody go and kill a Catholic, or go and kill a Republican if they had one. Those days are gone. When Constable Carl was killed and Ronan Kerr was killed, I actually went to Ronan Kerr's funeral and was very well received at it, I have to say. That was to show that there wasn't going to be a knee-jerk reaction. And the people who spoke to me at the funeral accepted myself being there and knew that there wasn't going to be a knee-jerk reaction. If they even had a suspect that there would have been, they wouldn't have spoken to me. Even the Taoiseach, Gerry Adams brought the Taoiseach over to the side of the road to talk to me. And then at the end of it, the DUP all left, and Sinn Féin stood round and talked to myself and a friend who was with me. So we're determined not to be drawn into it, not to let Republicans press our buttons as they did in the past. One of the Sinn Féin gets a lot of credibility, and the IRA gets a lot of credibility for the things that they don't do anymore. They've been, the dissidents have tested them and tried to embarrass them, and some of their ex-prisoners have been killed by local hoods or thugs or whatever, and the IRA, Sinn Féin, did not respond. So we're actually getting more credibility for not doing anything than some of the things we're actually doing. And we need to get ourselves to that position too, where nobody's going to press our buttons anymore. We have earned the right to have a say in the future of this country, and we don't want to lose that. We've come through enough, we've been used often enough, and we've abused ourselves often enough, but we're making progress. We're becoming believable, and we're developing some sort of integrity, and we don't want to lose that no matter what.
I'll just got you in a second, Eric. I'm just going to. Chris just wants to respond.
On your question. Last week I was down in Dublin to hear Peter Robinson as a guest of the tarnished Deputy Prime Minister Eamon Gilmore and Foreign Minister deliver the inaugural paper on the Carson lecture. And I'd have to say he was incredibly impressive. And there's no reason, I think, to doubt his sincerity in that he is trying to develop the DUP into an inclusive party and a broader party. The only thing I would say that I did get a sense when he was making his appeal, say, to people from the Catholic community, he was describing the DUP, without saying it, as a slightly right-of-centre party, and therefore it should appeal to Catholic middle-class people. So that's a difficulty for loyalist communities. However, having said that, Jackie quite rightly mentioned that within the DUP, there are people, Sammy Douglas is one of them, and who people like Jackie and people from loyalist background can be comfortable with. Because I honestly think that there isn't going to be any resurrection of a loyalist working-class party such as the UDP. And I really do think the PUP is going nowhere. I mean, that's a tragedy in a way. I think people lost a great opportunity in that, but I can't see it being resurrected. And maybe, I think the best thing is then, is to lock on to the DUP and create within the DUP, through people like Sammy Douglas, a Labour working class wing to the DUP.
Thanks, Chris. Eric.
Just a question to Jackie about orangism, of course, an interesting reminder. Just going back historically, the Grand March has been quite hostile to paramilitarism. To what extent on the ground do you see hostility from West Ulster, which is more orange in nature, is the cultural networks there more hostile for loyalism, harder territory in a way for loyalism to break into paramilitarism?
Well, to be honest, I don't get on very well with the Orange, you know. And it was before I said what I said about their Garvaghy Road, you know, but I was going to join the Orange in the 70s and they wouldn't let me. They wouldn't let John McMichael join. So the people in Lisburn actually formed a lodge of their own for John McMichael to join. For too long, we have supported the Orange, should it be Drumcree or the Ormer Road or other areas where they're having problems. We were the outside elements. Whenever something went wrong, it was never anything to do with the Orange Order, it was the outside elements. And I've been saying for a long time now that if the Orange are going to go anywhere, let them go on their own. And then if something does go wrong and there's any violence after it, they can't say it's outside elements. They have to accept that it's their march, their parade or whatever, and whatever the result is, it's their problem. Or they get the credit or the blame. Some of our areas where we have dual membership, there's a lot of people within loyalist paramilitaries who are members of the Orange Order. And sometimes that was the only time really would have clashed would be the Lake of Drumcree, where I didn't want any of our members going anywhere near it. But some of them, because they're in the Orange, they did go to, and support the Orange men at Drumcree, obviously. But I say to them, if you get into trouble and you happen to be arrested or hospitalised or whatever, you're an Orange man. You're not a UDA man. You know, as far as the North West would be concerned, they would be more closely involved with the Orange. Anything to do with the Union, Orangeism, loyalism is more bonded, more together in those areas. I'm not afraid to make the distinguish between ourselves and what we have been used as and what we have been criticised as, and the Orange trying to set himself aside as the great and the good. I suppose what argues with that is, on the 19th of May, I'm not sure if everybody will be aware, there's going to be what they're going to call us. The Grand Lodge is going to have, to celebrate the Covenant, the 100th year, the centenary of the Covenant, is going to be on the 28th or 29th of September. But they're making that their baby, their thing. So the Belfast and District are having one on the 19th of May, which is going to go to Ormond Park. But they're allowing loyalism to join in. There could be 35 to 50,000 people walking, and there will be thousands of people lying on parts of the route. There will be thousands of people in Ormond Park to welcome them there. The problem we have is, because it's the Orange will, and the bands, of course, will take the first part of the parade, and then it'll be the UVF in the Somme gear, the Somme associations. And what they're telling us is they'll have the uniforms, they'll have the antique or the motors with the machine guns on them, and all the paramilitary flags. And the UDA will be suited and booted. The Ulster Defence Union will be wearing their green blazers and what have you. If you're a nationalist and we'll pass this parade passes parts of Short Strand or wherever, how are you going to feel? Are you going to feel threatened? Or is that going to be a positive thing or a negative thing? And I'm very worried. If it's part of the peace process, we should all be moving forward, and we should take into consideration how the nationalists feel. But the Orange Order is saying, that's not our problem. That's a police problem. The police have said to them, or somebody, people belonging to us have asked them, what happens if the dissidents attack the parade? Well, that's not our problem. That's a problem for the police. What happens if some of the local wine teams, or the Blue Bag Brigade, as we call them, joins in and causes problems? Oh, that's not our problem. That's a PSNI problem. But it's not. It's their problem. It's their parade. And they're responsible for the behaviour of the people in it. So I will never be joined up with the Orange Order. I don't want to fall out with them anymore. I just believe that, in particular with the Garvaghy Road's concern, a lot of the local Orange men are shopkeepers and traders in the area, and a lot of the people on the Garvaghy Road would shop in those shops or trade with those traders, and if they were left their own devices, they could sort it out. I believe, I blame Sinn Féin for coming in and orchestrating the whole campaign, but I support the Orange, but I don't want anything to do with them, if you know what I mean.
Go on, sorry, at the back there.
Just that thing that you said there, Jack, and you said you're on the right to have a say. What do you mean by that? Because
sorry?
When you said in answer to your question, we were on the right to have a say.
Yep, yep.
You know, so if you're not being elected by the people in Castlereagh Road or Crumlin or Schneider Road, how do you have that right? And how long will that right actually go on for? You sort of an actual electoral mandate.
You know, we've been hit with this word mandate many a time. You know, what we would say is there's an apathy within loyalism. Maybe only 35 or 36% of those registered to vote in the likes of Tuckmona or Sawney Row or the Shankill or River would bother to vote, because they don't believe the politicians have let them down. I suppose you could say, so the other 64% support us. You know, they come to me for a house, or they come to Colin for some problems in Dromore or rural areas. Some of those people who don't bother voting depended on the paramilitaries to look after them, to deal with any problems they had. They didn't bother with the politicians. But I believe the genuine people within the organisations have earned the right to have a say in the future, because what we did was reactionary. The politicians used us in the early days, Paisley in particular. We were their army. It's only whenever people like John McMichael and Andy Terry and people, some of the people within the UVF leadership decided that we would make our own decisions and we would call the strikes or burn the buses or block the roads, that we would do that ourselves, and Paisley hadn't got control anymore, that the politicians went their separate ways, and loyalism sort of lost its way a bit because they weren't responsible to anybody. But I still think at the end of the day, well, we're doing what we thought was right for the community. It wasn't always right, and some of it was very wrong, But the whole idea and what we believed in was we were defending our community and we were doing the very best for it. And many people within loyalist communities would tell you that themselves. They see us as the people who they depend on. They criticised us in many ways for decommissioning because I remember when the IRA decommissioned, some people in the short stand were saying, the UDA is going to murder us in our bed. You know, and I heard people in Sandy Rose saying when the UDA decommissioned, the IRA is going to murder us in our beds. You know, the people believe, still believe, in the good parts of the organisation or the good people in it, and they see us as genuine loyalists, genuine unionists who want to be part of the future. And I think when we're part of the problem, we have to be part of the answer. And our influence, although it may be waning, our influence is very, very important in working class areas where young people don't see themselves as having any identity. It's our influence that's keeping the ship on some sort of lane at the minute.
Time for one more question, if anybody's got one.
Questions for Jackie. I've listened a lot about the change of nature of loyalism, and I find it really interesting, and I was just wondering what you see, we touched on it a bit in the last question, as you're of the most concerns now, what are your priorities that will be top of your agenda?
Well, my priority is and I can't speak for all the areas in the organisation, but certainly again, I refer to Colin and the people in South Belfast. We realise the problems that the lack of education has caused our people, our children. We keep saying, and I've said it, and I've corrected myself a few times, our young people are our future. But if they haven't got the education and they haven't got the social skills to be our future, then I'm actually saying they can't be, they're not our future. So we need, and we were talking to Katrina Ryan this morning, who used to be the education minister. We need more done in loyalist working class areas, or unionist working class areas, if you like, so our children are better prepared for the future. I don't want all the future politicians or the MLAs to come from West Belfast, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I want our young people to feel as if they're going to have some sort of input into the future. They need some sort of employment. Integrated schools are all very well, and they do get to know each other, and the kids do have some sort of friendship or relationship during those school years. But when it comes to the end of the time for school, there's no job, there's no workplace for them to continue that friendship, so it all just falls apart. We need to build up that relationship so they don't fear each other, they understand each other, and the Catholics aren't demons over there. But I'm very, very worried of the whole social problem for young people. We're very aware of the criminality within loyalism, republicanism, drugs, all the problems that young people have. And it's up to us as parents, as community workers, as whatever, to do our very, very best for our young people, to give them some sense and some chance of a future. Because there's no... There are plenty of ways of demonstrating how bad they can be. They have very few ways of demonstrating how good they can be. And that's not their fault. That's our fault and the politicians' fault. The peace process is working great at Stormont, basically anyway. Sinn Féin and the DUP are getting on very well. The ex-combatants, ex-paramilitaries are getting on famously. We're working hard together, doing unbelievable things together. But the peace process hasn't reached the ground yet. It's still a middle-class peace process in many ways. Our young people have to see the benefits of it, and they have to realise how important it is to educate themselves. And their parents have a lot to do with this too. They have to educate themselves, get themselves in some sort of job, some sort of standard of life or living where they can be part of the future. At the minute, we're excluding them, and they're excluding themselves.
Thanks. I wonder if you could put your hands together with me and thank the panel for their contribution. Thanks a lot, Jeff.